So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist and composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include geologist Sam Wentz, Andrew Weather, Sean McCann, Clea Vandiver, Chris Williams, Ryan Sawyer, White Boy Scream, Dorian Wood. I could go on and on. But this week, I have an absolute legend on the show. It is the one, the only, Carlos Cafoni. I'm super excited to have him on. He's got a new record coming out this week called Pendulum. It's on Room 40. It's an album of collaborations with the likes of Zola Jesus, Ben Chasney, Lea Bertucci. It goes on. It's just, yeah, it's such a great record, and it really, I feel like it shows just a another side of many sides of Carlos's work. Carlos is just a rad dude. That's all I really can say. He did mention over on, I think on Instagram today, as I'm recording this, that No Fun will return in 2026. So that's nothing but good news. And I can't wait to see what that's all about, what it's going to look like, what he's doing, and just, yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. Anyway, Pendulum is out this Friday. I can't recommend it enough. And this was so much fun. So much of what Carlos talked about resonates with me. It was like looking into my own head. So hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a writer, the founder of some of the most legendary stuff in this realm of the world with No Fun, the label, the festival. It is Carlos Cafoni. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Thank you, Brad. Thanks for having me. Psyched to be here for this.
You're always working on stuff, but you got a really cool new record coming out in February on the great Room 40 called Pendulum.
Yeah.
Coming out the same day as my album on Room 40, actually. So February 6th, bros. Anyway.
Nice.
Man, there's so much about this record. It's a lot of collaboration is kind of the theme of the record. Greg Kelly, Moby Frate, Zola Jesus, Ben Chasney, Lea Bertucci, and I'm forgetting one person.
Igor Kavalier.
Igor, that's right. So one of the things I was thinking about, like this, there's this sort of like geographic journey built into the creation of this record. You know, recorded it in California, and then you sent it all over the place, and then it went to Japan where Jim O'Rourke mixed it, and then back to California, then goes to Australia for release. I'm kind of like, what was there something that sort of drew you to this sort of like distributed globe spanning sort of process, or is it just kind of how it worked out?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of those records that I knew was going to take a little bit of time to make. So actually, I began right around the time when I finished my previous record, Dreamwalker, and I kind of have this idea that it had been a while since I had worked with a lot of new people, and I came up with a list of people that I really like, whose music I enjoy, who I wanted to work with, but I haven't yet. I hadn't yet at that point. And I just started to hit them up and be like, okay, I hope they want to do something with me, you know? And everyone said yes. Everyone was really thrilled. So initially the record was supposed to be all collaborations. There's two people that never finished their tracks. So I finished them myself because I really like them anyways. And I wanted to kind of have them on the record to give it some space. It worked out. And that sometimes happens, you know, when you're trying to work. Everyone that I have on the record is really busy, is doing a lot of stuff, playing live, doing records. So sometimes, you know, you say yes to a project that you can't complete. So totally fine with that. But that was the idea, that I would send these tracks out to different places, to different people, and then to see what happened there. You know, this is the type of collaboration where I did all the initial kind of sounds and then send them out. For people to do their thing and then see what came back. So it's definitely a very different record for me. I mean, of course, I've done collaboration records and I've done releases made from live sets, but I had never done a record like this where every track has basically a different person on it, or almost every track and their own take. And it made it very interesting to me to just lose control a little bit and let other people kind of also steer the way the track was going to go. Because I think except for Greg's track, which I had an idea in mind that I talked to him about, I think all the other ones, so I was just like, here's your thing, go for it. Let's see what happens.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. It's like if you gave him any sort of vision or direction, or if he was just like, here's a piece, do your thing.
that was it, really. It was like, here's a piece, do, you know, however you want to do it. You want to cut it up, you want to just, you know, do overdubs. And it was always the whole, this lasted 2 years to make. That's another thing. It took a while to get every, you know, all the different pieces, tell people that I was sending them tracks, and then finishing the tracks, sending them to them, getting them back, talking about them and doing additional things if necessary. So this was a long process. So there's that part of it, you know, too, where it was also like a little gift that I received throughout these 3 years. Whenever one of the tracks came back, I was like, oh, awesome. I have something unexpected and new that I don't know what it's going to sound like, that I'm part of, that I can now see if, you know, we need to do anything else to complete. And then I think for me, the cherry on top, what a terrible phrase, but the cherry on top of this ice cream of an album was that I got Jim O'Rourke to do the mix. Cause that's another thing. When I had all the tracks, I was okay, now do I mix them myself, or okay, let's add another component to it. And I happened to be in Japan April of last year now, I think. Yeah, last year, in 2024. I don't know when this will air, but this was in April of 2024. Right. I was in Japan. I played a show with Jim, and I think we went out one of the nights I was there, and I asked him, and he said yes. So, and I was really happy because he's, you know, he's an extremely talented music producer. Has a, not that it matters, but a Grammy award winning producer. And I got him to do the mix on my record, which is, I was really glad. I'm a really good friend. He's always been very, very kind to me. And I try to visit him whenever I can in Japan. So that was it. That's kind of how it worked out.
When he mixed the record, were you there when he mixed the record, or is that he just you sent it to him and he did his thing?
Yeah, no, I wasn't there. I was back home. I kind of sent it to him afterwards, and he did his own thing. And I trust him 100% with anything, mm-hmm. so I knew he was just gonna do it. And I think I only had a note on maybe one of the tracks, because I every track that he makes, I send to the person as well to take a listen, I think, in most cases, mm-hmm. just to make sure everyone was on board with the final thing. And I think we had one small note, but other than that, everything came out, you know, right away. Just it's great. So yeah,
that's amazing. I've really been enjoying the record. Like, it's
thank you.
I love the concept. There's also in the writing you did for it for the label, this line that keeps kind of, I keep going back to that I really love, is the pendulum swings and the world keeps rotating endlessly, which is, it's just like a really beautiful description. And I'm curious, how that idea sort of connects to the sound of the record itself, or maybe, or the, you know, the concept of the record itself.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things there. You know, the pendulum was originally used in one of the world fairs, which the cover art is depicting. I don't remember if this might have been in Paris. I think it was in Paris. And it was used to demonstrate that the earth was rotating. So mm-hmm. that's kind of where that came from. But yeah, a pendulum, like, you know, you just throw it and it comes back and it kind of keeps swinging back and forth. So then that also made sense to me from the perspective of sending this audio out somewhere and then just coming back, you know. And then, you know, while that's happening, things change. I, like, you know, this record's going to release and I live in Spain now. I no longer live in the U.S. So the world keeps going. And, you know, we do our things that come back to us, but, you know, things keep changing and evolving. So that's kind of where that came from. And, the last couple of records I've done, I've enjoyed trying a little bit of, not necessarily poetry, but I guess, some language, adorned mm-hmm. language in a way to come to, you know, make it more complete, which I think it's important nowadays. I know a lot of people will listen to these tracks online, but I am very much interested still in the physical part of the equation. You know, I love albums, CDs still, and it's nice to open something and see some image, some writing that completes the project. So,
totally
part of it.
Totally with you on that. Real quick before we jump into the songs, not about this record, but I did want to quickly ask about the duo record you recently did with Joachim Nordvall, another record I really love. I wrote about it last, I don't know, I've lost track of time, but so you guys have known each other forever, but this is, and you've done stuff on Ideal, and this is the first time, like, what finally made you guys decide, hey, let's do a record together?
You know, this was a thing. I think I asked, I don't remember if I asked him or he asked me, but throughout the years I've known Joachim, I've been in touch with him. I've done stuff on his label. I visited him to his hometown. I know his kids. I spent some time in August a couple of years ago there. And I think that's when he said, oh, we should do a record together. I don't remember if it was me or him, but it made sense. And I had all these kind of like tracks. I always, whenever I make a record, I'm always recording stuff and I always kind of have stuff around. And I have all these tracks that I didn't know what to do with, that I didn't necessarily want it to finish or didn't know how to finish. And I was like, okay, I have enough here to give to Joachim to see, you know, what... let him do his thing again, similar to how I did this record. So I had stuff that I thought would work for him specifically. And that's how this record happened. It took a while to come out, but it's been, for me, it's been really fun to finally work with my friend on a on a record, and I really like what he did and the way we finished it and it came out. We were trying to do some shows for it, but we quite couldn't make our schedules work. But I would love to also do some live shows with him. That'd in be the awesome. Future. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was kind of prepping for this, I was like double and triple checking. I was like, wow, they really haven't done thing together. Just cause it's, yeah, I associate it's, like No Fun and Ideal.
Yeah. You know, like we had a for No Fun Fest, we had the last version of it happen in Sweden.
Right.
And that was through him. Basically, he managed to get some funding to make it happen and help me. And kind of, if it wasn't because of him, it wouldn't happen. So yeah, we definitely have been entangled in projects for a long time. Had never done a collaboration until now. And yeah, I think it came out really good.
It's a killer record.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't have any good segue here, but we're going to jump into all of the regular part of the episode. Cool. And so, as always, I'm going to start with, what is the first song that you remember?
Yeah. So the first song I remember is the theme song for the Spider-Woman cartoon in Spanish, because it's completely different from the one in I guess, any other languages. The cartoon is called Mujer Araña. And I think that's the name of the song as well. And it's this kind of disco-y, a new wave almost thing. And, I've never forgotten it. It's, Mujer Araña, and it's like super catchy. And then, describes some of her. And I double checked this. I looked at the version in English, and it's just some instrumental thing that nothing like it, you know?
And it's lame.
It is super, the English version is super lame. This version, it's amazing. And I realized that this happened a lot in cartoons in the 80s and 90s too, where particularly in Spain, they would do a new version of the song for the for the Spanish-speaking audience, you know. There's some Japanese cartoons, for example, that I watched as a kid that also had this treatment as well, where they had their own version in Spanish of the song that has nothing to do with the original. And furthermore, I had a vinyl that collected the different Marvel superhero theme songs that my dad must have bought me, because I remember looking at it and playing it like every day. Remember. Yeah, it was like the Spider-Man one, and there was one for Hulk and a couple other things on it, all the Marvel superheroes. But this one always stood out. I just really always loved this song. And I don't know anything about like who recorded it or anything. It's something maybe I should look into. But it's the first song I remember to from my childhood. Yeah.
I mean, I can understand, like, when I was prepping for this and listen. I got it stuck in my head. Like, it's so catchy and it's so good. So I can understand how it's like stuck with you for, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
That is a good question though. I wonder who did write it. It's like, it's a fun, cool song. Or what is a song that either makes you cry or makes you feel in that kind of space?
Yeah, so for this, I have Always Trying to Work It Out by Low. Low is a band that made this record called Double Negative that I really love. It's one of my favorite records of all time by any bands. And, during COVID, it came before COVID, but during COVID, I just listened to this all the time. I would even do it in my car. I just play it in my car and just sit in there, and sometimes will cry to a lot of these songs. Actually, it's just a hard time, and this record is just so emotionally heavy in a way. And I think this is just a song about running into your ex at a supermarket, actually, and seeing them with their kids or whatever. But even that. Part of it of being like an everyday you know, encounter with someone that meant something to you. I think mm-hmm. there's a whole little story in there, you know, that's really sad in a way. And thinking about what could have been
right.
a person in that situation. But just the music on this entire record, but this is one of the songs that I remember right away that I thought of. On this entire record, it's hard not to get emotional listening to it. And then, of course, you know, this band is no more because one of the members passed from cancer. So, like, that's also makes it even more sad to listen to this record. So on top of it, that makes it even more sad to listen to this, you know?
Yeah, it's such a... Yeah, there's just this heaviness to it. Like, not, I mean, some of the music too, I love, I mean, even the way it's produced and mixed and stuff, I feel like kind of adds to it. I was thinking when I was listening to it the other day, like, I love the way the drums are mixed on it, where it feels like they're kind of clipping almost and like cutting into the rest of the song. Yeah. And it, to me, it just kind of heightens that emotion of that. It's like, I don't know, it's, you know, like these live sort of bleeding into each other, kind of that, you know, what could have been. And it's like that feeling creeping into your, I don't know. It's such a, it's so beautiful and just kind of just breaks me into pieces.
Same. And you're right. Like I read a little bit about the production of this record and I don't remember the specifics right now, but there's definitely certain compression and analog equipment that was used to get everything kind of sounding so heavy and overdriven in a way, and then put back into it. So this was definitely one of those albums that was engineered in the studio to make it sound a certain way. So it goes beyond just like, you know, the actual songwriting, but it goes into using the production to elevate what they had. And it's, I point to this record all the time. And it's one of those records that I play to any friend that visits me or that I see in their house that don't know it. And if it comes up, I'm like, you have to, whether they know and they like Low as a band or not. And I'm like, no, you have to understand, just listen to this record.
Yeah, this record just kind of transcends all of that. It's just an all-time great record. On the flip side, what is the song then that will put you in a better mood?
This is another weird one. So this is a song called Tu Pum Pum by El General. It's another song from my childhood. This is a song from 1990. So before I was exposed to like any sort of like, you know, kind of new music that define the way I think and make music. This is one of the first reggaeton songs ever made. And El General was just a pioneer of this style of music. And there was a little dance that I would do in high school. This is in sixth grade, I think. So before it was sixth, seventh grade. And they would play it at every party. And I felt really good about this song because I grew up in Venezuela, in South America, and at parties, people would dance merengue and salsa, which for me were both very hard. I'm not a good salsa dancer, but this I could dance to because it's just kind of like this kind of moving side to side. And I learned a little dance and I could do it at parties.
That's
and stuff.
Awesome.
I forget this song exists and every once in a while it comes out. And it just makes me smile. Just think, and the lyrics are super ridiculous and funny too. And this guy actually really interesting. The reason like no one knows about him anymore is because he became very religious and became sort of like a pastor at a church and kind of left.
Oh wow!
This whole party music stuff he was doing behind, but he still was, I believe, the first. Person that you could say, okay, this is a reggaeton type of music.
I've heard this before and I hadn't thought about it in so long, but man, it's like a party in a song. It is so much fun. And I don't know, it's interesting that he became like this, like really religious and a pastor and stuff, which I mean, I can't see from something. He has so much charisma that like this song is just
right.
And so that I could see that translating well to that world as well. Yeah, this is, I don't know. I love this song. It's just fun. It just, and I can understand having, like, it makes me want to, every time I hear it or even think about it, I just want to get up and start moving.
Yeah. General, all the way from Panama.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Yeah, this is a funny question because the way I think about music, and actually I had a really long conversation with someone a couple months ago, and the way I think about art is, for me, the value of something, it's what it does for people, right? Not just how many people like it and enjoy it, but what kind of meaning it gives them, what it means to them, to their lives, so how it can change them or transform them in a way. So it's hard to be objective and say, objectively, this is the, you know, what are you trying to measure? The most technical song. So I went the other way and I thought about a song that's very personal. And this is a friend that, this is the song that, you know, a friend told me about and was like, hey, just sit down. Let me play you this. It was actually Jim O'Rourke who first played me this song. We were in a bar in Tokyo. This is like 15 and 20 years ago. And this was a bar that doesn't exist anymore, that was completely covering vinyl records from all around the whole bar, from floor to ceiling. And they pulled this record out and just played me this song. And it's called The Kiss by Judy Seal. And since then, I've become a big fan of Judy Seal. I have, you know, both her records and then the thing Jim did later, who got some of her extra tracks and kind of were released as well. But the this record is incredible. Both of her, you know, the records that she did when she was alive were incredible. And I think it is a great song. The instrumentation is great. It's beautiful. It's sad. And I think it's something you can share with anyone at any time. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, that's kind of how I went with this question, thinking about something that became very personal to me, that someone gifted me. And since then, I've also gifted to other people this mm-hmm. little song from Judy Seal.
Yeah, this is this is one of my favorite songs too. It's one of those ones that sometimes it can be hard to listen to because it's so, like, I get so emotional just like thinking about her story and thinking about just all the kind of history around it. But just the way it's arranged, it's like this slow kind of dramatic procession, and her voice is just this sort of phantom.
There's a live version of it from a show in England somewhere. It might be in London. That's really good too. That's just her and piano as well.
Oh wow. Yeah. I think I've seen that once or twice. I need to look that up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's such a beautiful, incredible song.
Another very talented person that left early. She had, you know, obviously substance issues and had a battle with her own religious beliefs all her life too. And I think that comes across in all her music as well, which is
very much
incredibly arranged. You know, if you want to learn anything about arranging,
yes,
I think her music, it's a great starting point. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, she could sing The Phone Book and it'd be beautiful. All right. Well, on the other side of things, sort of here, what is a song that you used to really love, but now, like, if you heard it recently, if you think about it now, it doesn't quite do it for you the same way?
Yeah. So this is a beautiful song too, but it's just stopped working for me because I think how many times I've heard it. But the Beach Boys, God Only Knows, is what I put in here. I mean, you know, when I was, I guess in college particularly, I had a lot of friends that loved this record and I got really into it. And then also when I was going through some hard times in my early 20s, like everyone does, there was a period of time where I listened to Pet Sounds like every day, multiple times. And it worked for me for sure for a long time, but I've heard this song used in so many things, and I'm sure I've heard in movies and TV and stuff that and there's so many versions of it that it doesn't have the same effect that it used to have on me anymore, even though I still think it's a great song. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because it is kind of, it was funny when I got your list, because I think a number of people have picked this as sort of the objectively best song of all time, which, you know, I get kind of where that comes from. But it's kind of, it's one of those things that it sort of becomes so like ubiquitous in a way that it, for me, like similar for me, or it's just, it took the edge of it off, and like, it doesn't, yeah, like it's to say, it doesn't.
Right.
It's like, I recognize it's an incredible, beautiful song. I'm not going to argue that. But for me, it's just kind of, all right.
I mean, how much, you know, it's like, if you like eating spicy food, eventually you have to go even spicier or it won't work. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, eventually I'm just going to either be listening to like silence or harsh noise wall.
Oh, yeah. Both. I listen to both equally.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, they kind of do the same thing for me at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's a song that most people hate? I don't know, or some group of people hate. Somebody hates it. I don't know. Yeah. You don't care. You love it anyway.
This is a weird one, because I can think of many things that are on the opposite side of this that I hate and people like, or some things that I like and some people hate that are my friends, but a lot of people like. So I went with something a little different, and I think this might be one of the few, if not, yeah, one of few very experimental songs that I put in here. This is Hecker, Pandemonium 9 playlist. This is from a 12-inch that was sort of had some, I guess, reworks of some of the other stuff he did. And the reason I picked this one is because I was asked to DJ a show in New York, and I don't remember which show it was. It might have been like a Deerhoof show or something like that. And I freaking love this record and how messed up it is. And I put it on, and I pretty much clear the room when I put this record on.
I love it.
And so I definitely remember specifically that moment of like, man, no one likes this thing that I really love, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I picked this. And I love Hector's music. He's great. I had him play my fest when I used to do it. And I love almost everything he does. Not everything, but yeah, this is the record. One of those moments where I was like, yeah, I just empty the room because I play this Hecker record.
I can 100% imagine it. I think I love this thing, man. It is, talk about like sound that warps your reality. It is so, like, I feel like it takes like a certain amount of endurance, like, to listen to and really, and I love that about it. Like, it,
yeah,
you get through it and you're like, whew, okay, that really
good morning.
Yeah. Put this on in the you know, if you're trying to kick caffeine, just listen to Pandemonium 9 playlist, that'll do it for you. I love the idea of, though, like, especially like, yeah, if you were DJing, especially, you know, like, and I love Deerhoof and stuff, but I imagine people going to a Deerhoof show are not.
Yeah, it could have been some other show. It comes, sure. I think it might have, I don't know if it was Deerhoof or something else, but I just, it was something like that, you know. It was definitely maybe not the right place, but it was at a time when I was at my height of belief of like noise and weird music conquering all. And so I boldly went with this record.
Yeah, I always tell people these days, like, you know, there's a lot of new like noise projects around here in Tulsa, a bunch of, you know, kids in their young 20s and stuff. And I'm like, man, you aren't really in it until you've cleared a room. That's like, that's an experience we all need. Okay, well, if it's not Hecker, what's the most romantic song?
I went with something that maybe some people would think is cheesy here, but I really like Robin, Call Your Girlfriend, as one of the most romantic songs. And one of the reasons I picked it too is because there is an aspect of it that is anti-romantic in a way. This is a person telling you to call your girlfriend and let them know that it's over because you're with them now, right?
Yeah.
And I think we can all relate to that, I guess, in a moment in our lives. I certainly can, but it can also be uplifting to have that And also very romantic to be stolen away or to steal someone away, right. You know,
yeah.
Even if momentarily. So I really love Robin, by the way. I've seen her twice live or twice now. And anytime she would play, I would go see her. She's incredible. And I love most of all of her records,
right.
Which is maybe weird for someone that's really into experimental music and noise, but I just think she's a really great songcrafter, you know, and that's what I think this song.
Oh man, I couldn't agree more. Like this was one of the songs that when you sent it, and it's been a minute since I listened to this song. Like I know she had a new song come out a couple months ago, and it's great. Yeah. And I forgot just how much I fucking love this song. This song is so good. Everything about it, like the lyrics and the sort of
And it's kind of like electronic music too, you know, the synths sound great, everything sounds great on it, it's good.
Yeah, and then I was watching the video, and I forgot, it's like, it's this, you know, I don't know if it's a continuous shot, it seems like it's just one shot of her doing, you know, this incredibly awesome choreographed dance in this warehouse.
Yeah.
And oh my god, it's just, yeah, and the part on the bridge where there's kind of, it sounds like there's a vocoder getting all like, this song. I love Robin too. I think she's sort of the height of pop music in the last however long, and I really hope she has a new record coming out next year.
I think she's working on one. I think I heard she's working on one, but that'll be
fingers
great.
Crossed. I was really excited though that this was on you, so I was like, hell yeah, I'm good to talk to Carlos about Robin. This is a great way to end my week.
Nice.
All right. Well, what is the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
Yeah. So I think that this song is the whole record, but The Priest They Call Him by William Burroughs and Kurt Cobain. Mm-hmm. And I've referred to this before as the first time I really heard noise music.
Same.
Because, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I was really ready to absorb like a sponge new music when Nirvana came up on MTV and Smell Like Teen Spirit happened. And I was in South America. I had no access to any sort of weird music growing up in Venezuela. And this was I went out and I bought any Nirvana stuff I could find, anything that they would mention in their interviews, which is like how I started listening to Sonic Youth. And then from there, springboarded into Boredoms and all kinds of crazy stuff. Dude. But this was the first record where I was like, I had read a William Burroughs because I did do a lot of reading as a teenager. And it's fucking weird, right? And then just having the combination of these two people do something and then listening to Kurt Cobain just doing feedback and just kind of wailing on the guitar. And then William Burroughs' voice comes in. It was just incredible. And it just kind of changed my perspective of what was possible with music, but also what these two people could do. And just the idea that, he's just not a guitar player in a band. And William Burroughs is just not a writer. He could do this thing too.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was really changed my perspective on, I would say, not only, the artists themselves, but just what was possible. So this is a really great record that I love. Yeah.
Everything you just said, like, it's exact. Like, I think I was in sixth grade when Nevermind came out, when Smells Like Teen Spirit happened.
Yeah.
And I was just ready, and I just ate it all up. And I remember there was the book, and it got recently, like a new edition got reissued that was, I think, Michael Osorod wrote. It was a Nirvana book about, and everything in there, like it talked about like Kill Rock Stars and K Records. And I remember I had got a Thrasher magazine, like skate magazine.
Yeah.
And there was some record store somewhere, and they had like a catalog inserted in there. And I remember just saving up my money and sending off cash for all these weird records that on these labels that were mentioned in this book. I had no idea what they were. And it literally changed my life. Like, I mean, it's, there's a direct line from that to where I am right now.
Yeah. No, and it's kind of insane when you look at music since then, I don't know that there's been another inflection point like that, when something that was really kind of coming from the underground and that was very real has been inserted into the mainstream again in the way that that sort of music did. So,
I know. Yeah, I can't think of anything. But yeah, and also, I mean, it was the same thing when I heard this. I think I was probably 14 years old or something. And I got it because it was like, oh, it's Kurt Cobain. And I also, I knew William Burroughs. I think I'd seen Naked Lunch, like the movie at that point. And it's the weirdest thing I'd ever seen at that point in my life. And I was like, okay. And then it was just, oh, you can do that with a guitar? Like, I was always trying not to have feedback on my guitar. But wait, it can be a, oh, man, pivotal. All right. What about lyrics? Are, obviously, you generally make music that doesn't have lyrics. But our lyric, like,
there's a few exceptions, but yeah, mostly that's true.
Are lyrics like an important thing to you? Like, do you pay attention to lyrics? Is it, can it like make or break a song?
Yeah. I mean, I think lyrics are important. I agree in general that I am first and foremost a sound person when it comes to what I care about. So I always tend to listen first to, you know, to the arrangement, instruments, instrumentation, the tone, whatever it is, whatever makes the song or the piece what it is. I really care about sound quality tremendously. But yeah, lyrics, I mean, are what makes a song, right? In a way. So so I pick one, maybe it's a curveball, I don't know, but Only Love Can Break Your Heart. It's by Neil Young, and it's, I'm not a super Neil Young person, just like I'm not a, a Grateful Dead person, but but this is one song that I heard, and I heard that, that just that line, only love can break your heart, and I was like, fuck, that's so true, man, and so painful, and I really that really did it for me, and I always kind of remember that, that line, and little bit of truth from that song.
Yeah, it's such a good line, and it, I always feel like a lot that line and just kind of the lyrics, and it feels very like he's like, I learned this firsthand the hard way. Neil Young's always been kind of hit or miss for me, but I do, I love this song. I mean, this whole record's pretty great, but There's just a lot that I don't know.
Then there's a couple, Neil Young's records that I've heard that I like. Lark is okay. Trance is great. So, you know, there's a couple ones that I like. But I also, again, I'm not super deep into stuff.
Right. What is the last song that you completely fell in love with?
Roxy Music, Jealous Man. And I know it's an old song. I also was not super knowledgeable of Roxy Music songs till I don't know, the last 10 years, so it wasn't something that I last couple of years actually listened to a lot of Roxy Music, and this one I was just kind of singing for looking for karaoke songs for some reason.
Oh, nice.
And this was one that I was like, oh wait, I can sing this song, and it's silly in a way, and it's just kind of a I just kind of like it and love the whole song. So it has some whistling at the end too, so you can practice that as well. So anyways, I ran into Roxy Music recently and been really digging into their stuff, and this is one that I love.
I love that this is, it's like one of your karaoke songs, because one of the things like that's really cool, like I think I really love how how he sings on this song. So, like, I think there's, it feels very restrained, but also like on the point of almost like he's about to just fall apart.
Right. It's a little ridiculous in a way, right? This song, it works too. It's I think it's I like it. I think it's a great song. Yeah.
I think part of why it feels like it leans into the ridiculousness a little, like they called it Jealous Guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's some self-awareness.
Yeah.
It's a great song. What's the best hype song?
Oh, this one's probably an answer a lot of people gave. I would imagine. But Survivor, Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, dude, Rocky and just anytime this song comes. So this is actually another good karaoke song too.
Yes.
And everyone knows this song. And when it comes to dang, 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 you know exactly what it is. And the bass, it's a really incredible song. I don't know what else to say.
It's like as soon as that riff hits, which that's going to be like one of the most iconic riffs ever. I mean, it's just like my fists in the air, like I'm ready to run through concrete.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It gets you ready to go and do anything, you know?
Yeah. Surprisingly, this song has never been picked.
Really?
I know. I don't know what's wrong with people.
What
I've done like over 100 of these and people
I was gonna say. Wow. I this is one of the things where I put this down and I was like, oh, maybe because you know this was part of the area where you could select a different question. And I was like, probably so many people have said this, maybe. And I was like, no, fuck it up. We'll just talk about it.
It's the song. I mean, it's anytime I'm like, I got to get something done. This is on the playlist. I'm like, all right.
No, I mean, especially if you were a kid when like the Rocky movies came out too. I think that's just like, you know.
I am of the age that this is perfectly, was right in that point of my childhood. So, all right, last two questions. So what is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but just because you associate it with something or someone or experience.
Yeah, so we actually talked about this band already a little bit, but this would be Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. And then again, because of the moment in my life where this hit, where I was just like, is Guns N' Roses good? What is this? You know, I was just kind of still confused. Nothing had yet hit me directly in a visceral way. Like did this. And, you know, when this is one of those songs that I don't necessarily need to listen to it ever again in my life. Right. I go back to it. I'm like, oh, it's overproduced. You know, it's so much chorus on the guitar, whatever. You know, there's many things you can say about it. It was engineered to do what it did. Right. Which is amazing. But it changed my life completely, right? If it hadn't, without this song, who knows, you know, maybe I would be living a completely different life and I wouldn't have done all the things that I'm happy I've done and all the music and all the people that I met and that I play with, I don't think would have happened without this song. So, it's very meaningful and personal for me in that way. And you know, it very much dates me as far as like my, you know, when I grew up with grunge stuff and I started a band because of this song too.
Same.
Or I was asked to sing in a band, however it worked, but I was in a band when I was 15, 16 because of this, band and the song. So yeah, it's super meaningful to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my note that I wrote down is I put the song literally changed my life. And it did, because it's the same thing. Yeah. Like, I was even realizing, like, I first learned about feminism because of Kurt Cobain.
Sure.
Like, and talking about, and I remember getting sent home from school in eighth grade because I got a white shirt and with a Sharpie wrote God is Gay on it. From
nice.
Which is from Stay Away, which is another song in there. And in Oklahoma in like 1992, that was... received.
No, my dad was really worried about what was going on with me. Yeah, for sure. Because of this song too.
I started
being in bands and you know. So I totally and I met people that I was too late to meet Kurt Cobain by the time I moved to the US. I never got to see them live, but I become friends with many people that were close to him, and I've had the chance to spend time asking about, you know, what that was like and what this person was like in that time. So, I think it's been definitely all positive because of this song. I think for me, maybe not for my family, but for me,
right. Yeah, my family might wish I'd never heard it, but
exactly.
But hey, that's okay. All right. Well, last question. What is, at least in this moment of time, maybe it changes. Maybe this is always the answer, but what is your favorite?
Yeah, this song changes definitely, but this is one that keeps coming back as my favorite song. And another song that I like to show people that don't know about this, but the Amanda Gallas, My World is Empty Without You. It's just another beautiful song that can make you cry. I think this was also around the time of, this was after, but a lot of the songs she made are inspired by her brother who died of AIDS at a young age, or too young of an age, who was a playwright. And it's just a beautiful song, and her voice is just brutal and incredible. And I've seen her twice, and I would see her anytime that I could. And I remember the first time was at CMJ in New York in like 2000 or 2001. And it was, I think the place was called Joe's Pub. It was just this piano in the middle and this sort of circular club around her. And I was just like, wow, super heavy. And I saw her in LA maybe like 12 years ago at a church. And that was also incredible. And any song she sings, whether it's her own or a folk song or a cover, it's incredible. She can sing in, she sings in like, I think I've heard her sing like 5 languages at this point too. So this person, you know, the Amanda Gallis, it's a goddess, you know, it's like,
yeah,
this,
right.
I would worship her, you know, she's incredible, yes, super talented. And there's no other artist or musician like her. And this is a song that I keep going back to and that I really love and that could work as an answer for many of the other questions
absolutely in
this list as well.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no, it's like if there was a church of Diamond Nogales, I would go to church. Because, yeah, she's just... such a singular, like, I don't know, she's so singular, like there is only one and there will only ever be one. But yeah, amazing song. And like her it's like the vibrato to end all vibratos, her voice,
just is there in her voice somehow.
It's incredible. Well, awesome, this is a whole lot of fun. Thank you again for doing this. Pendulum is out on February 6th on Room 40. Is there anything else you want to plug? This will probably be out sometime late January, so I don't know if you got anything else.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm really excited about this record coming out. I'm really thankful for all the people that collaborated with me on the tracks, and they're all amazing musicians that I love. Again, thanks to all of them. Thanks to Jim for mixing it. And by the time this comes out, I should have announced a tour in Europe, a short, small tour, but definitely doing some dates in Spain and France, and hope to one show in Switzerland, and we'll see what else happens. And I plan to do another round of shows later in the year, so keep an eye out. Awesome. I mostly post them on my Instagram because that's what people do. But yeah, by the time this comes up, there should be an announcement for those tour dates as well.
Sick. Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you. Once again, thank you to Carlos Cafoni. Please check out Pendulum on Room 40. Link to that in the show notes. Also a link to his picks, the playlist. And everybody, thanks for listening. This is, you know, feel like we're off to a good start this year. I'm going to try to keep these going weekly. I can't promise that it will because there's a lot going on and scheduling and stuff, but there's lots of great episodes on the way. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Please leave a rating, review wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe, all that stuff. Patreon.com/FoxyDigital if you want to throw a few bucks my way to help keep it going, help offset costs. I'd appreciate it. But either way, thank you for listening. And until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.